hear it for a little.
But if you're on the watch, you mean that person already had the stem cell transplant?
You should have made a fire.
Just watching it. Yes, yeah, that's what Steve has now. Well, kind of. But Roy, that was a scare. And the Hershey doctor, I think they had. I just worry about people saying it's too expensive, and it really wasn't that bad.
They changed.
Really not bad at all. And our budget, picture recently, because. For Coco Pack, so. And now you're all like, our door. I think it was the website, we're carrying it on. Oh, for the food rescue program. Yes, we had that the other day.
Oh, for the climate control.
Yeah.
How are you? For your signature and then reading too. It's fine.
There you go, David.
Yep, we're ready.
Okay. All right, the April 20th, 2022. Meeting of the Derry Township Zoning Hearing Board is called to order. I want to make everybody aware that it is and has been the policy of Derry Township to record meetings for the purpose of accurate notes and posting on the township website. This meeting is being recorded for those purposes. Okay. A roll call of members, please. Lindsay Drew.
Here.
Sandy Ballard.
Here.
Mike Angelo.
Here.
Tom DeDonatis.
Here.
And Steve Seidel, that's me, I'm here too. Okay. Okay, our first item tonight is approval of the minutes from the March 16th, 2022 meeting. I have a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, passes. All right, we have three decisions tonight of old business. First one's adoption of decision in the case of Matthew and Melinda Curran, case number 2022-04. As we established at our last meeting, I will read the substantive part of the order and then ask for a motion. Number one, the applicant's request for a variance from section 225-305, table 9, item E, regarding the side yard setback for principal use is granted. The applicants may encroach to 12.6 feet of the side yard property line for the proposed garage and wood shop. Number two, the applicant's request for a variance from section 225-305, table 9, item E, regarding the side yard setback for a principal use for the master bedroom and bathroom is withdrawn. Okay, can I have a motion to approve that decision?
So moved.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Second.
Thank you, Sandy. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that motion carries 5-0. Next item is adoption of a decision in the case of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, case number 2022-05. And I will read the proposed substantive parts of that order. Number one, the applicant's request for a variance from section 225-401.4.F.B.1, table 36, regarding the maximum horizontal sign face and the maximum area for two freestanding signs and one ground sign is granted. The applicant may install the following wall signs with the maximum horizontal wall face and maximum area as follows. A, freestanding sign, Hershey Park Drive, 5 feet, 1 inch high by 15 feet, 5 7/8 inches long, and 72.57 square feet. B, freestanding sign, Sorterra Road, 5 foot, 1 inch high by 15 feet, 5 7/8 inches long, and 72.57 square feet. C, ground sign, Kiefer Road, 4 feet high by 10 feet long and 36.45 square feet. We have a motion to approve that order.
So moved.
Thank you, Mike.
Second.
Thank you, Sandy. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that motion carries 5-0 as well. Okay, next one. The adoption of a decision in the case of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, case number 2022-06. Okay, again, I will read the substantive parts of the proposed decision and ask for a motion. Number one, the applicant's request for a special exception from section 225-502.5 regarding the communication tower is granted. The application may construct a 120 feet high communication tower with an additional 3 feet for a lightning rod at the subject property as represented during the hearing of this matter. Okay, may I have a motion to approve that decision?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you, Lindsay. Thank you, Sandy. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries 5-0 as well.
If
If I could, David Narkevich, Assistant Chief Counsel for the Department of General Services. I apologize, not dressed up as a lawyer, but on behalf of the Pennsylvania State Police and the Department of General Services, we thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay, so next on the agenda is new business. We have a hearing in the case of Hershey Square, 2014 LP, case number 2022-07. If you could please identify yourself. We're going to ask the court reporter to swear you all in and get your names and identify, you know, names
sure.
and addresses before you get started. So.
Good evening. My name is Charlie Suhr, S-U-H-R. I'm an attorney with Stevens & Lee in Harrisburg.
And good evening. My name is Holly Evans. I'm with Evans Engineering in Harrisburg, PA. I do.
Is there anybody else who will be testifying?
No, just Holly.
Okay. All right, we could maybe proceed then.
Again, good evening. My name is Charlie Suhr. I'm an attorney with Stevens & Lee in Harrisburg, representing Hershey Square 2014 LP, which is the owner of the Hershey Square Shopping Center in Derry Township. It's located along Hershey Park Drive and May Street. And the applicant has owned the property since 2014. It's a site of a strip shopping center with some out parcels with multiple tenants and various commercial uses with several detached buildings. We've been before this board several times, at least since I've been involved with this project. We were here in January 2015 when we did some reconfiguration of the state store. The bank for mixed use and also for a parking variance. We were also here in December 2020 for redevelopment of the former Kmart site. We had land development plans approved and zoning relief for signage for the new tenants were coming in. Finally, we were here in May 2021 to develop a lower portion of the property with approximately 7,150 square foot multi-tenant building. And we had a variance request related to impervious coverage. Since that time, we have submitted land development plans for the project, which would be the small commercial building on the lower site. And at this stage right now, the land development plans have received recommendation of approval from the Planning Commission, and we're really waiting a result of this hearing, as well as some other permitting outside agency going forth. Well, while we were submitting land development plans, we received really for the first time a comment from staff that additional zoning relief was needed that was not asked for at the time, basically because no one realized it. We didn't realize it, staff didn't realize it, and we didn't ask for it. And this had to do with an overlay district within your ordinance. Your ordinance has numerous overlay districts which are sometimes challenging to realize if they apply or not, but staff has made a determination that this particular overlay district does apply to this, and because of that, there's a setback issue or a buffer issue that we have, and that necessitated the filing of this application forth. So the relief we're going for this evening is going to be a deviation, a dimensional variance as to the buffer in relation to the 03 overlay district along Hershey Park Drive. And we also have a request to extend the 1 year period that was granted for the prior variance to allow the construction to proceed for the prior decision, which related to the impervious coverage. So that's the second request that we have this evening. Holly Evans is here this evening to testify. Unfortunately, we do not have a representative from ownership that we had last time, but Holly is here to testify really about the initial application. I do have exhibits which I'm going to distribute, and we will be going through these.
Thank you.
So I have handed out an exhibit packet, which has six exhibits that are pre-marked. We'll be going through these. Some of these were submitted with the application. Some of them you've seen before, prior hearings. But we will be going through them in some detail, but just to form the record that we have. So with that, we're going to have Holly testify first. Holly, could you introduce yourself to the board, name and employment?
Yeah, again, good evening. My name is Holly Evans. Excuse me a second. I'm the president of Evans Engineering, located here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I've been with the company for 33 years. I founded it back in 1989.
And are you a professional engineer in Pennsylvania?
Yes, I am.
All right, so we're going to be using Holly as an expert engineer this evening related to land development application. And are you familiar, Holly, with the property subject to the application as well as the surrounding area?
Yes, I am.
Are you familiar with the zoning hearing board application that was filed for the hearing this evening?
Yes, I am.
And are you familiar with the prior applications filed for this property in 2015, 2020, and 2021?
Yes, I am.
And did you testify at some of those hearings?
Yes, I did.
All right. And are you familiar with the zoning provisions related to the 03 overlay district set forth in the township zoning ordinance?
Yes, I am.
And are you familiar with the needs of the owner or the ownership as it relates to the development of this site, particularly the multi-tenant building that's subject to the application this evening?
Again, yes, I am.
Okay. And are you authorized to speak on behalf of the applicant this evening in relation to this application?
Yes, I am.
So let's just go through, get three documents in quickly. I'm going to show you what I've marked as exhibit number one. And can you identify what this is?
That is the deed for the property.
Okay. Let me show you what I've marked as exhibit number two with multiple pages. Can you identify what this is?
That is the letter and application for the zoning relief.
Okay. So just so we're clear, we have the application.
Yep.
And there's a narrative attached.
Supporting documentation is required. Yes.
All right. The site plans we submitted are not on here, but we'll see them later, right?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. So this is just the application and the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Then I'm going to show you what I've marked as exhibit number three. And could you identify what this is?
Okay, it appears to be the decision of the, and bear with me here, Sam. Yeah, the Area Township Zoning Hearing Board decision dated November of, or I'm sorry, I'm looking for a date on this one here. Yes, the 19th day of May, 2021. That was for our impervious coverage relief.
So that was really, this is the written decision from the last time we were here.
That is correct.
Okay, great. All right, let's go to what I marked as exhibit number four, and we actually have it on the screen there.
Yep.
You can either testify off of this or off of the screen, whatever you find. Could you identify what this is?
That is the, I'll call the cover page or the initial page of the zoning application plan, which sort of identifies the overall shopping center and more specifically identifies the location of this project for relief.
All right, so if we look over in the upper right-hand corner, there appears to be a location map. What's
yes.
that?
That is a quad map that's basically used to identify the property itself within the overall roadway network, in this case here off of Route 322 and Hershey Park Drive.
And then in the center of the plan, we really have in normal print, not dark print. What would that indicate?
That is the actual shopping center. The 28 acres makes up the shopping center, the various buildings, including the Wise Markets, the most recently redeveloped Kmart area, the strip center between it, as well as the out parcels out front, including the Panera Bread, the Five Guys, and the Chipotle, as well as to the very front, right along the Hershey Park Drive, at the right near the entrance ramps, the actual 7,500 square foot retail project that is part of this application.
So that's part of the proposed conditions.
That is correct.
All right, and how is access going into the shopping center?
Access is basically off of Hershey Park Drive. You go up May Street. There's a series of entrances off of May Street, the lower one that would go back to the hotel and this development, but also provides a direct line over to the far south end of the shopping center. There are two other access points, one directly in front of the Wise Markets, which fronts along the entire frontage of the shopping center, and then a more of a service access in the rear of the shopping center, which provides circulation around fire and emergency purposes, and let's say vehicles that are leaving from providing deliveries would go out that rear access.
And is there any elevation difference as you cross over the property going sort of north to south?
There is a significant elevation difference relative to the main center itself, as you see up here. In the non-colorized area, the portion to the top of the page here, is at a much higher elevation. It is setting up quite a distance elevation-wise.
in the lower portion, which is the area that we will be speaking about later on tonight.
Okay. All right, let's go to what I've marked as exhibit number five. And again, that is also shown on the screen. You can, if you could identify what this is, first of all. And let me ask you this. Were these two exhibits and the one we'll see after that, were they all prepared either by you or under your direction and control?
That is correct. Yes.
Okay. So now we have exhibit five. Could you identify what this is?
Exhibit five is really an enlargement of a portion of the center, which really is there to help you identify throughout the Hershey Park Drive area, the right-of-way associated with it, which also encompasses the overlay district. It then goes on to show the stream, which is identified as a tributary of Swatara Creek or the Bullfrog Valley Run Creek, which is also identified with the red hatching, as you see up on top of the screen there. The red hatching being a buffer zone required as a setback off the creek as far as any kind of development, which prohibits any kind of development within that 50 feet of the banks.
All right, so let's, and right in the middle, we see the proposed building. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And what's the area of that building?
The building is 7,500 square feet.
All right. Now, I know when we were before the board before, the building was slightly smaller, 7,150 square feet. It got slightly larger, correct?
The building got slightly larger, but overall, we were actually able to develop this with less impervious coverage than we had requested relief of. With some more refining in our engineering and working the application and the drawings, we're actually able to increase the building by a few square feet, but yet reduce the overall impervious footprint from what we had originally requested.
And that would be a shrinking of the asphalt of some sort?
Shrinking of the asphalt, tightening up a lot of things, working on some radiuses, and just trying to tighten things up everywhere you possibly could.
So as it related to the 2021 decision that came in here, would this building footprint as shown on here be compliant with that decision?
Yes.
Okay, great. So we have the building that's on here, and there appears to be some tenants identified. Is that what's planned to go in there?
That is correct. Basically, the building is broken up into three proposed tenants. On the, I'll say, the plan north there, the top of the sheet, the plan left side here is going to be Starbucks. It's a 2,300 square foot retail. And on the right side will be Aspen Dental, the 3,500 square feet. And in the center is an open tenant space at this point in time. My client may have a tenant for it. I don't know that, but I do know the two principal tenants that are defined on the plan.
All right. And then the Starbucks, does that have a drive-through?
Yes, it is a drive-through with the Starbucks.
Okay. So again, what's shown on here is compliant with the impervious grant. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So based upon this, you know, this setup, did you have an opportunity to submit land development plans to the township?
We submitted land development plans to the township in December of 2021. Those plans were submitted, they were reviewed, comments were generated then for us from that set of plans.
And then, I'll get back to one of the comments from then. After that then, did you resubmit plans?
Yes. As a result of getting comments, we revised the plans, resubmitted the plans back in March of this year, which were then heard by the Planning Commission in early April, and from that meeting we had received conditional approval.
For the land development.
For the land development, yes.
And so that it's pending action by the supervisors and maybe some outside agency approvals?
Some outside agencies and obviously tonight's discussion.
Okay. All right. Now, let's go back to the first land development plan submission that you did back in December 2021.
Yeah.
You said you received comments.
Yeah.
Was there any comment that came out related to a zoning issue?
Yeah, actually, that is the first time that I was even made aware that we had a zoning issue relative to the overlay district. I mean, when we made our application originally, we obviously combed through the zoning ordinances for our zoning district and thought we had applied and addressed everything in the design, only to submit the plans in December to get comments back late December to find out that we had an issue with an overlay district, which was really the abutting district, the area of Route 39.
All right, and is that district the we're calling it the O3 district.
O3 overlay district, yes.
All right. And that comment came from
township staff.
Correct. Okay, great. So was that the first time that you heard about that?
That is correct, yes.
And as far as you are aware, was that really the first time the township staff was aware of it?
Yes, because we had multiple meetings with township staff in developing the plan, both sketch plans early on, field visits with the township staff, and experts looking at the floodplain areas and the vegetation there, and discussions with them. And this was the first time it came up to us, or that we were made aware of it.
Okay. So let's just talk a little bit about the O3 overlay district. I'm just going to pull out my district here. Are you familiar with the overlays that are within the zoning ordinance?
Yes, I am.
All right. So if I go through, I'm in Article 4 in the very beginning. There appears to be multiple overlay district besides environmental, there's 14 or so overlays.
Yes.
So the one that came out is in Section 225.41.1c, Pershing Park Drive, Route 39, overlay 3.
Yep.
All right. So if I go to flip to the beginning of my ordinance, there appears to be a description. It's really small, as I print out here.
It's very small, yes.
Sort of like less than half a page. Could you describe what is the overlay district for the O3?
The overlay district is the actual right-of-way itself, the limits of the right-of-way. And if, may I approach the screen to the point?
Sure.
Okay.
Here's the laser pointer, the yellow button.
And I have a habit of that, so I apologize.
Here, Holly, why don't you go over here? Can you point from there then? Yeah.
Oh, yes. Good. I just wanted to make sure I had everything figured out before I walk away. All right. The overlay district actually fits within the right of way. So the right of way for Route 39, Rich Park Drive, is this line that's right by here. You'll see it paralleling the main road. In this case here, the right-of-way is 200 feet wide. And the overlay district begins just as you're coming off the ramps and extends then along the Hershey Park Drive, under the railroad bridge, and up along. I will slow down.
Now, I'm going to point, we don't have a graphic for the screen on this, but let's go to exhibit number 6
Sure. That
we have here. And could you identify what this is?
Exhibit 6, and actually, I believe Dave's got
it. Oh, he does have
up
it.
Here. Exhibit 6 shows the extent of the overlay district along what I'll refer to as the quarry property to the north and the Hershey Company property to the south of Route 39. So you'll see how the overlay district sort of follows it right away up through and then heads all the way towards, I'll say, would say to the Giant Center. As a way of generally giving a description of it. It is bounded by the width of the right-of-way, which varies anywhere between about 125 feet wide to 225 feet wide, depending upon where you happen to be with along Route 39.
So then on Exhibit 6, I see you have some of those dimensions marked off of our property, is that correct?
That is correct.
And again, some of the numbers are marked here, you know, various widths, 150 feet, 114, 120, et cetera. That's on there.
Yes.
So this is then the overlay district, which is just encompasses the right-of-way along this portion of Route 39.
Yes.
Okay. So let's just go back one exhibit to what I have, 5. There you go. Keep it up. It's really awkward here. Slide.
Oh, that's for you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Are you familiar with the requirements in Section 225-41.1c?
Yes.
All right. So what I want to do is I want you just to read that section, starting with just reading number 1, which talks about. Why don't you just read what that says?
Applicants proposing development on lots or the portions of lots thereof within the designated Hershey Park Drive Route 39 Overlay 03 shall provide a landscape buffer along the perimeter of said lots contiguous to the Hershey Park Drive Route 39 right-of-way.
All right, so we'll stop there. That may be a little confusing, let's put it that way. So. Is the applicant's property within the Route 39 right-of-way?
No.
Okay. Let's go to read what number A says.
A minimum of 40 feet of said buffer dimensions closest to the right-of-way line shall remain with natural vegetation or planted with turf grass only. If turf grass is the primary ground cover, then trees shall be planted on 50-foot centers and a white fence to match existing established fencing in the overlay shall be required.
So this is the buffer requirement for the properties within the overlay district, correct?
Yes.
So what, as the interpretation staff, when you got your comments coming back, how did that relate? What was the requirement that you have to do?
Okay. Based upon comments from staff and their in the interpretation of the overlay district, because our property abuts the overlay, even though it's stated to be within the overlay, it says we abut, although we actually abut it, we're not in it. We are required, and by the interpretation of staff, that we have to provide a 40-foot buffer along said right-of-way.
And that's shown on, you have a 40-foot line shown on that exhibit, which is exhibit number
Exhibit 5.
That's on Exhibit 5, yep. So the 40-foot on there. So that's the buffer, that requirement that's on here that you're required that, to put.
That is the requirement that was expressed to us based upon the review by the staff in a meeting. And I'm not saying that the argument, please understand, I'm trying to clarify how it came across, so I'm trying to make sure I'm clear. Because the ordinance talks about being within, we are adjacent to, which goes back to my original comment. We read our ordinance and did not know about having to read an adjacent ordinance.
Okay. So at that portion, again, we have kind of a blow up on the screen right now. Again, approximately how wide is the right-of-way right there?
The right-of-way along Route 39 here is 200 feet. It's specified here on the exhibit.
And how wide is the cartway or the paved surface? The
cartway is 90 feet.
So how much of non-cartway is on the applicant's side of the property between the cartway and the right-of-way line?
It ranges between 40 feet here, right in front of our site, and 57 feet as you go further along Route 30 or Hershey Park Drive.
And what's the current condition of that area?
It's natural vegetation, overgrown. It's a scrubby brush. It's a very rough vegetation, but it's a natural vegetation.
And then under current conditions, beyond the right-of-way line, as you go up towards the Red Hatch area, what's the condition there now?
Again, the same. It's a overgrown, grassy, vegetative, bushy, viney-type material. It's not mowed. It's not maintained as far as a manicured lawn. It's not heavily treated. It's just overgrown
stuff that's there.
Yes.
But it's not a impervious surface.
No.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about how the project interacts with this 40-foot buffer area. Based upon the project lighting out, do we have encroachments within this 40-foot buffer area?
We are encroaching, yes, in that 40-foot buffer with our service drive that provides access to our property, to our facility.
And that's shown in a dark green, correct?
That is correct.
And let's just clear, what's actually happening there? You have a service drive, anything else?
A service drive that comes in and goes across that buffer area and a very small portion of the automotive parking lot and green space perimeter, which would be the manicured green space adjacent to the parking lot.
And approximately how much is that encroachment into the 40-foot buffer, depending on the maximum encroachment?
It's about just a little over 22 feet at the maximum space.
Okay, but it does vary. It could be close to zero, but there's a curve there.
That's correct.
Okay. So the variance that we have request is to allow that encroachment into that 40-foot buffer area as shown on this exhibit. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Now, we went through at the prior hearing reasons why we had to develop this property here. Of course, it was approved as to impervious coverage, the placement of the building here in this area. I'd like to go over some of those factors again. As you look to development of the lower portion of the site, did you try to maximize the placement of the facility?
Yes, we maximized the placement based upon floodplain concerns. This portion of the site where the building is located is the highest elevation, and predominantly most of this area is already out of any floodplain. And if I may just bear with me when I diverge a bit, there are two aspects of the floodplain. There's a current existing approved floodplain, which we are totally out of. There's also a pending future floodplain mapping that will be adopted in the future, which we've designed this plan according to future mapping, which reflects the flood elevations of 2011. So this has been designed to accommodate even the worst of what has occurred in the past and what will be mapped out as floodplain areas. So we've tried to position this building
So it is predominantly outside, and with the construction, then all of the access road will be outside of any kind of flood. It'll be flood-proof, basically.
Okay. And of course, you do have a crossing over that of the red hatched area.
We have a crossing, as identified, comes off of the service road and then through the red hatch area, where we will allow obviously a natural open bottom structure to allow the water to pass through.
And sort of summarizing, as was testified at the prior hearing, this really maximizes the use, but minimizes the amount of impervious coverage. Is that right?
Yes.
On here, and you've positioned it such that you're respecting the flood boundaries as much as possible.
Yes.
And that would it be possible to really move that building up north, such that the pavement got out of the 40-foot buffer?
No.
And why not?
Because of a required DEP required buffer along the Bullfrog Valley tributary that runs over through the property, where we are required to provide a 50-foot buffer from any development other than a perpendicular access, which we are providing.
Okay. All right.
May I just ask a question for clarification? Could you show where could you confirm the area in the green that is encroaching onto that buffer? That service drive isn't going to be new. It is not existing at this time. There's already a service road that goes back to the hotel property.
This is the service road that goes back to the hotel property right here. It parallels the creek.
So nothing from the start of that red hatch section down to the green buffer area on the service road for the proposed development is currently built.
Correct.
Thank you.
Yeah, everything from the service road going down, that's all will be new, not built.
This will all be new. So we'll create a crossing off of the hotel service drive.
And that plan here with that service drive was part of the previously granted impervious coverage that was
correct
before this board last year. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, just to confirm, the impervious coverage that's shown on this plan in the pending land development plans is within the variance granted.
It is within. It's actually, we have been able
less
to reduce.
Okay, thank you. I just want to make sure it was the same plan.
Sure. Okay, so let's get back to the right of way. We got the distances, and we have the encroachment is approximately a little over 22 feet or 22
feet, 2 inches.
2 inches maximum. That's the maximum encroachment that's in there. And in front of the building, we have an existing green space within the right-of-way between what numbers?
Between 40.8 feet, I believe, here, and 57.2 feet is identified here. So between 40 and 57 feet.
And then we would then be providing an additional at a minimum 17 feet.
At a minimum 17 feet, 10 inches, and everywhere possible, at least the 40 foot, wherever else possible.
Okay. And as you had testified before, the right-of-way and other portions of Hershey Park Drive is not 200 feet.
No, actually, in other places, it's much smaller than that.
Okay. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the dimensional variance. Of course, there are standards that the standards that we have to show anytime we're going for a variance, use variance or dimensional. This is a dimensional variance. Talking about unique physical conditions of the property, which creates the unnecessary hardship, and that creates an inability to develop the property in strict conformity with the ordinance due to those physical conditions. The hardship's not created by the applicant, and there's no adverse effect to the neighborhood, character of the neighborhood, and it's the minimum relief. So it's really the five standards.
Yes.
And are you familiar with those standards?
Very much.
So let's talk a little bit about each of those standards. First of all, the physical conditions. Do we have a really a regular shaped lot or an irregular shaped lot?
It's a very irregular shaped lot.
And are there any physical conditions on the property which necessitates sort of special considerations?
Well, there are several conditions. Number one being the stream that runs and cuts through the property, the Bullfrog Valley tributary, which has the additional buffer requirements of it. We also have the fact that we are, adjacent to the flood plain, so therefore where we have to position the building in order to obviously minimize any impact and or avoid any floodplain impacts.
What about elevations or slopes?
Elevations and slopes, there are slopes associated with both the stream itself and the elevations. Again, we had a position at the highest elevation possible, so that's what we've chosen relative to.
So when you pull that all together, what does that do to your possible development area?
It limits it quite significantly.
Okay. Is it possible to develop, you know, with this approved use in here that we have, you really in strict conformity in this limited development area and not encroach within this 40-foot buffer area?
No.
Okay. And the element, the building's not encroaching, correct?
The building's not encroaching.
All right, so we're dealing in the encroachment for the access drive and parking, correct?
Circulation for the property, yes, and parking.
And those are necessary components of the development?
Yes.
All right. And were the slopes, the streams, the regular shaped lot, was that created by the applicant?
No.
Was the existence of the 40-foot right, sorry, the 200-foot right-of-way created by the applicant?
No.
Would you expect there to be any impact on the neighborhood if there was this encroachment going in within this 40-foot buffer area?
It's not going to have any adverse impact on the neighborhood. It'll be very much conforming to what's already out there.
All right, and speaking of which, if we zoom out a little bit, oh no, we have the picture there. Are there already existing encroachments within this 40-foot buffer?
Yes. If you look just beyond May Street, as you're heading towards the railroad bridge, the parking lot of the restaurant between May Street and the railroad bridge, you can see the parking in that parking lot there is already in that same said 40-foot buffer on our side of the road.
So that would be an existing nonconformity?
That is correct.
All right. And is it?
Additionally, though, there's also, if you want to zoom out across the street, the service drive that services the shopping center across the street is almost fully in the buffer. When you start getting to the far eastern end, there's a buffer line coming down. This is the service drive that services the McDonald's, the Wendy's, the other restaurants across Hershey Park Drive.
So those are existing nonconformities.
Yes.
And is the encroachment that we're showing either in line with that or maybe less than that?
Less than.
Okay. And would you expect there to be any, any impact on the neighborhood or anything?
No.
Okay. And the last, finally, is really going to be the minimum variance request. Have you modified this or designed this such that you have the minimum encroachment within this buffer?
It is. I mean, as when we got the relief for the impervious coverage, we did everything we could to shave that down and pull dimensions in, and also at the same time, we have now, you know, we pulled this site as tight as we possibly can and cannot further reduce any other impacts.
All right. So sort of just to recap, even though the property is not within the O3 zone, we're following the staff recommendation that we need to require this 40-foot buffer adjacent to that zone in here in the regulations. And you have provided as much buffer as possible between the proposed development and the right-of-way line. Route 39, correct?
Correct.
And the O3 district is very wide at this point, correct?
It's very wide. Obviously, the intent is to provide that green space separation between the asphalt pavement and the development, which is already naturally provided because of the extra wide, extra width of the right-of-way in this location, which provides that extra green space that you don't have elsewhere along Hershey Park Drive.
Now, I know we can't predict what PennDOT's going to do, but what if the chances you think that interchange is improved such that the pavement would get increased in that area?
There's always a chance. There's always a chance it could widen a little bit of the Hershey Park Drive, but it's already wider than the lanes are. You have a very broad shoulder already provided on that side of the road. So any improvements that might occur would probably be nominal in width.
All right, so it'd be more unlikely that the road would get wide at that location,
correct,
right at the interchange. Is
correct.
That correct?
That's correct.
All right. So let's move on now to the extension from the 2021 variance. I'm going to show you what we marked now as exhibit number 3. So exhibit number 3 is the written decision, and then the decision came out, had a standard term that is in the decision, and that's on paragraph 3. And what did that provide?
Basically, it provides a period of 1 year to basically take the decision and act upon the decision and get to a point of a building permit application being issued.
And so when would that one-year period end up?
I believe it would be in May of this year.
All right, and are you currently in the position at this time to satisfy that condition?
We are not, basically because the amount of permitting processes and the agencies that we have to go through relative to the stream crossing permits and further development requirements.
You just need a little more time.
We need more time.
All right, so what's the request then in relation to the to that time period?
You're asking for a one-year extension.
And that would go from the issuance of this decision here, should it be approved?
Correct.
Okay. Anything else?
Other than the fact, I mean, as part of this development, I like to say that we're trying to work with the township on flood restoration processes in here, and floodplain restoration, and improving, doing floodplain improvements, which will also do improvements along that creek, which will help provide the township with stormwater credits. So this, you know, the improvements that we're looking at doing there associated with this development are also being done with working with the township staff and improvements for environmental credits for floodplain restoration work.
Wonderful.
And that's part of the cooperation we're doing, which involves the longer permitting process that we're going to be going through.
So with that, I would just introduce these documents into the record, and if you have any questions, we're here to answer them.
Easy one here. What is that dotted rectangle in the southeast corner of the property that?
I know.
Yeah. What is that? All right.
I've been well schooled about slowing myself down and making sure I'm by the microphone. You're talking right here.
Yes. Yeah.
That little dot is a transformer.
Oh, okay.
A transformer pad. The transformer has to set so far above the floodplain, and then it's required to be screened with vegetation. So you see vegetation based upon the ordinances
okay. Planted
around.
So that's permanent. That's something that cannot be moved.
That is correct.
Okay.
It's a transformer setting on a concrete pad with shrubbery around.
Okay. Two more after this, but. Is this is just a general question, is the extension of the application from 2021-02 for the additional year, is that contingent upon the approval of this buffer area? Do we have to approve the one in order to grant the extension, or?
No, the impervious coverage has already been granted, so they're asking for an additional year on that.
Okay. All right. On the impervious coverage issue, how much did you shrink the impervious coverage by with your new design?
I'm going to venture to say about 2,000 or 3,000 square feet.
Okay.
I can't sit here and tell you, Michael, the exact amount, but it was not a huge amount, but it was, you know, several thousand square feet.
Significantly less than what you
when
you added to the building is
correct.
Okay. And I guess just a clarification question. Since you're not in the 03 overlay, but you're adjacent to it, are you of the opinion that you're already in compliance? Is that kind of what the rub is here, or what?
Well, yes. It's sort of an awkward thing. I mean, we didn't appeal the decision, the determination.
Yeah.
There was sort of a timing issue by the time I got aware of it, what we're doing with this. And we just took the easy route to go for a variance.
No, that's admirable. So, that's very,
you know,
admirable. Yeah. How did that?
I mean, that section is poorly written.
Okay.
I've had some discussions with Mr. Emmerich about that. Should be changed.
And then I guess the obvious question that will probably come up is the, you know, you have two tenants and then you have the tenant space. If that were to disappear, and you shrunk the building, and would things be able to be shifted over in order to be? You wouldn't be able to do that, and why not?
Because even if I shift that building over that 20 feet or the width of that tenant space, that 20 foot width, it's not going to resolve the problem of getting the service drive itself out in order to get around. We have to provide adequate access and service for fired vehicles to get around this facility travel lane width. So shrinking or eliminating this additional tenant space here, though it would shorten the overall length of the site, instead of this being the length you see it here, it would only be about 18 to 20 feet shorter in length. Everything else you see would still be there and still be in the overlay buffer space. So
even if some of that parking, because if you had, you know, one less tenant and you needed less parking, would that be the case as well?
I would need one or two less spaces, but it still would not avoid the ability.
Still be here.
I'd still be
requesting.
Here.
Okay.
I'd still be here.
Okay. All right. Good. Thank you. That's all I had.
I have a question. In the previous, when we looked at the impervious coverage, it was stated that at the time, vegetative coverage was 43.7%, and it would decrease to 38.13% as a result of the impervious coverage. The general commercial district requires a minimum vegetative coverage of 30%, so there was about 8% there. Does this impact any of that by requesting this variance?
We're not. We meet the vegetative coverage requirements, which is 30%. Your ordinance is structured such that you have a 60% maximum impervious, a 30% minimum vegetation, and a 10%, I'll call it a wiggle room. Right? Wiggle room could be gravel, could be things that are not vegetation but are not hard surface impervious. Our requests or our exceeding of our impervious is not taking away from the vegetative. In fact, if anything, we've added back some of the vegetative space to it.
Okay. I just wanted, I guess, to clarify that by granting a variance to reduce the buffer of vegetative coverage.
No, we're
because the buffer is requiring, the buffer's required natural vegetation.
You're taking away some dimensional but not quantity. The overall vegetative area is provided for.
Okay. So this variance would not impact the overall percentage of vegetative coverage. Okay, thank you. I just wanted to clarify that to make sure that this doesn't inadvertently then create another.
What was the number you said we had before, 38.1%?
It was 43.7% currently and was testified to decrease to 38.13%, still compliant.
With this plan now, we're at 38.3%, not 38.13%. So we're actually higher vegetative cover with the plan as we currently have it, which has been recommended for approval by the Planning Commission.
And that's for the total property, so this variance does not have any impact on reduction further of the coverage. Thank you.
I have a follow-up question to Mike Angelo's question about the transformer.
Yes.
So is that transformer existing?
No, that is a transformer that will service the property. Itself is not in the buffer area because the buffer does not extend to that location. The transformer is located where it's at because of where utility poles. You see the pole right beside it, that little black line and circle. So you'll see a utility pole, PPL pole here, so we're able to obtain power from here, drop down from that power pole, go underground to the transformer that would then feed the building. The actual transformer is a very small item.
Right.
These are nothing more than hedges.
Right. I'm just trying to establish what's existing versus what's proposed as part of the project. So the pole, is that existing or is that proposed as part of the project as well?
Located pole. The pole currently sits about where my dot's at.
Okay.
All right. So we're going to relocate the pole slightly out to maintain circulation around.
Mm-hmm.
Put a new pole in and drop the power from the pole to the transformer.
Okay, so let me follow up then on that. So what would prevent you from bringing the whole development to the right on the drawing here and putting the transformer on the other side of the pole, to the left side of the pole there, and therefore sliding further out of the buffer?
Topography right into this location here and stormwater management features that are in this location that control the stormwater from this half of the site, which drains to the topography in this area here.
So it's which way, higher, lower, what's...
This is, it's high up here, dips down, it comes back up, and we're able to drain the stormwater from this end of the site over to Plant East into this area before it then exits out into the stream.
Okay.
All right. There's also paving setbacks. I don't have all the paving setbacks listed. There's also paving setbacks that limit how far east I can take this center, all right? Which, again, I don't have them here myself right now, but I'm sure that this line is very close to a paving setback. So, Steve, you know, am I a foot or two? Is there a wind warmer, a foot or two? Maybe,
right.
But there's not like I can move this, pick the whole thing up and move it 20 feet to the right.
Okay. Yep. That's what I'm asking. Okay. Thank you.
I have a couple questions, if I may, regarding the existing encroachments into the required buffer that you pointed out for the Applebee's and also the access road. Did they exist before the buffer was created, or were they put into the buffer?
Well, I would have to assume that the access road to the south pre-existed any buffer ordinance.
Okay.
Okay.
Let him. I think David wants to testify on that.
Yes. In both instances, the current encroachments existed prior to the buffer for the 03 buffer.
Okay. Then they would be grandfathered because they were there before the buffer was created. Okay.
Correct.
Another question I have for you regarding the stormwater, which you mentioned, the, I guess, swale or basin to the south side there. Would it not be possible to do one under the asphalt instead of beside the paved area?
We had the site extensively looked at by a geotechnical engineer, and they strongly recommended not doing any undersurface stormwater management. That came very clearly to us, because originally we had undersurface in our original design to provide underground stormwater management on this site.
Okay.
And when we got the results back from that geotechnical engineer and their exploration, it came back, do not.
Okay. Another question for you, touching on what Mike said earlier about the parking, if you would remove part of your leasable space, okay, in the zoning variance that you were granted last year, it says that you were required by ordinance to have 35 spots and you have 43. So you could eliminate 8 as it stands today and still comply, right?
When we went to the ordinance at that point in time, that's how many spaces we came up with. We currently now require 41 spaces based upon the ordinance with the uses.
Because you increased the square footage?
No, it's a combination of that plus looking at the how and talking with staff on doctors' interpretation of how many spaces are required for the Delta Dental facility. We required more space than we initially thought we were going to require. So it went from 35, virtually assumed, to now 41 spaces we are required.
Okay, and I understand that. So if we go from the 43 down to 41 and then also reduce some of the square footage of space, you could save some more. My point is that you could get those out of the buffer area.
I could basically get those couple of parking stalls possibly out of the buffer.
One last thing I have for you. If theoretically you would flip-flop the building as far as the tenants and move it down to the right, would it be possible then to pull that roadway a little bit out of the buffer also?
The issue is with the tenants, with the Starbucks, how it has to flow so that the queuing is positioned to safely queue vehicles as they come in, provide a long queuing line around, and they're queuing with their driver's door on the left, the window on the left. The position of how that place circulates in queues is what depicts who's on what side of the building.
All right, very good. Thank you.
Just one more thing to confirm, and I apologize if you touched on this before, since there are multiple buffers. You are in compliance with the 50-foot buffer in the Red Hatch area as it relates to the Bullfrog Valley Creek.
Right. That is a DEP and state-required feral plate buffer.
So it can't move anywhere up
because of that buffer,
yeah,
you're kind of in between there, and the current buffer in the overlay is just narrowing the lot.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
I guess I could just ask, in this, in the text of the ordinance, it mentions that a white fence has to match the existing established fence. Is that something you all will be adding?
No, that is, we have two choices, and I apologize, I'm sorry. We have two choices. You can provide natural vegetation.
I see.
Or if you wish to go turf grass, then if you go turf grass, then they would be looking for you to plant, if it's turf grass is your primary source,
right,
then what you would do is you put the white wood rail fence with a tree every 50 foot.
Right.
Okay. That if you travel Hershey Park Drive out past the Giant Center, there's a large field that has a nice wood rail fence along it,
uh-huh,
and trees. That is the intent if you choose that option to buffer. So if you don't want to leave natural vegetation, you could use a mowed field or mowed turf grass with a wood rail fence and trees as your predominant method. We are going with a natural vegetation, which is out there, and along with the restoration of the floodplain and the floodplain improvements. We had that little small piece of green space that then would also...
Oops. Where's the... the proposed lawn area there?
Correct. That would be then, we're asking that to be part of the relief to allow that to be within, you know, that lawn area to be within the buffer. It's not natural, it'll be a turf grass area that little bit, but it's not the predominant.
Okay. So the 17.10 is 17 and 10 inches. That's the narrowest if you don't count the grass. The
if you
proposed.
Don't count the grass. This grass here will be probably natural surface in this location, but we wanted to at least accommodate the fact that it could be a little bit better mowed in that,
yes,
space.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be natural vegetation or grass, but this area may be mowed or maintained a little nicer than left rough grass.
Right. And then there's that the tree would be adjacent to that.
Correct. So we are providing a tree in that area, just no wood rail fence.
Right.
In here, because I've got a retaining wall along the parking lot.
Well, there's a retaining wall, okay.
The retaining wall is to hold the site up, so the floodplain will then follow the lot, because these are all retaining walls elevating this property up.
So that's why the variance has to be the amount, the 22 feet 2 inches is because of the retaining wall.
Yes.
You can't increase the buffer space because of the proximity with the retaining wall.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Road,
that helps.
The road is back here. The separation between a road and a retaining wall provides room for buffer space, guide rail to get in there, and then a physical retaining wall, which would be a keystone, one of those decorative-style block walls you would see along the place. I'm going to venture to say in that location it might be 8 or 10 feet high. It's not overly high. It's not 1 or 2 feet, but it's high enough as you come off of the service drive. It's high right along through this area here, and then it starts creeping down to almost nothing by the time you get back to here. And then right in this location here, I don't believe we have a retaining wall here. This is grass in this location right there. Up against.
What is the elevation difference between the area in the buffer closest to Hershey Park Drive and the retaining wall and
here,
driveway?
This area is about 7 or 8 feet lower than that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
David, could you just explain how this came, like how this was not incorporated or considered in the original variance request?
Certainly. So this was not through zoning, we have multiple checks and rechecks, and as part of the land development plan, township staff had a discussion what to the meaning of the O3 overlay. And at that time, it was determined, and the zoning officer decision was that it applies to properties that abut the O3 property. Whereas previously, it was not discussed. So it was a zoning decision made at the time of the plan submission, as they had mentioned previously.
Of the original plan? Sorry, I'm trying to...
Sorry, the land development plan, not the original variance plan. It was discussed during the subdivision process.
Which was about 6 months post the variance plan.
Which, yes, December.
So. In other words, no one knew about this back then. We didn't know. Staff didn't know. It just didn't come up.
So, yeah, I don't recall what exactly was shown in what detail for the prior variance. What did that show in terms of the amount of encroachment into the buffer area? Which
the encroachment was the same or even more back then, because what we did is, the building grew because of the Starbucks got higher. It originally had a bigger indent. So the Starbucks fit within the overall envelope. How the building went from 7150 to 7495, whatever, is the Starbucks got bigger and closer towards the drive-through lanes. How we worked that part. That's how the building grew. But then how we shaved down the impervious coverage is the entrance drive coming off of, we narrowed that up by about 2 feet. So we were pulling things in and tucking things in everywhere we could, which pulled us further away from Hershey Park Drive. It might have been actually improved. We weren't paying attention. We weren't looking for this compliance at the time. We did not realize it was there.
Right. I realize that. I'm just curious how this plan compares in terms of...
It's almost the identical plan. It's just been snugged up and tightened up a little bit. So like drive lanes, we shaved a foot out here, shaved a foot out there. Parking stalls, we can shave out a couple inches in certain locations. And little tweaks on our curb radiuses and improve and gather, 40 feet here, 100 feet, square feet there. We gathered and gained green space. And it actually ended up pulling ourselves further away from Route 39. Not significantly, a foot, 2 feet, whatever. But so this plan was an improvement from the plan you see previously saw and approved.
Okay. I'm sorry, Mike.
Driving force of me. Trying to increase the green space, or just to be a good citizen, or why were you trying? You ended up creating less impervious coverage, more green space. What?
Combination of a couple things.
Yeah.
The floodplain and flood zone ordinance really was a driving.
Okay.
And simple. Because as part of the plant preparation, we are allowed to place dirt or fill in a floodplain, all right, provided that we offset it by removing dirt or fill somewhere else. So for every bucket of dirt I put in over here, I've got to take a bucket of dirt out over there. So in trying to balance that aspect of the equation, I needed to pull this site in as tight as I possibly could. I know that time we applied the initial variance application, we had pretty well done a pretty good job of it in a preliminary design, but it was not a final design. So as you have time to spend more money in the design, more time in the design and tightening up everything, we find that we needed to pull a few more buckets of dirt out. So the only way to pull buckets of dirt out is to pull those walls in. Mm. Only way to pull buckets of dirt out is to narrow that road from 30 feet to 28 feet, to narrow a drive-through lane from, let's say, 21 feet to 20 feet in those areas. So anywhere we could pull a foot out here, pull a foot out there, we did to minimize the impact of the floodplain so that we are not adding, we've increased the volume of flood capacity. Thus, it also reduces the cost of construction, all right? And it allowed me to pull things tighter. I already had a defined envelope within the curved area where the Aspen Dental Retail and Starbucks is, so that defined area was there. I was able to play with the building sizes and grow those a little bit, tweaking the sidewalks maybe from 5'6" to 5', little areas that I could tweak and fall within that design frame that was previously approved, all right?
Yeah.
You want to call it value engineering or whatever term you want to use, but we then took everything we had and we squeezed from the outside in and we squeezed from the inside out and tweaked everything. Yeah, and still try to maintain the interior green space requirements as well.
just if I can follow up. So the dimension of the building from the stream side to the Hershey Park Drive side, how does that compare to what was submitted? Like where the drive-through is, for example. That little bump out, I guess, is for the drive-through there.
This edge up here did not change.
That edge. I'm saying the building itself.
I know, but that's what I'm getting at. This edge did not change. That was controlled. So the building itself may have gotten about 6 inches or so closer by tucking and narrowing up everywhere I could along this edge here by narrowing this up a little bit. I may have been able to move that building about 6 inches further north, all right, plan north. Not much.
That's not what I'm asking you, though. What I'm asking you is the dimension of the building itself, okay, from the edge closest to the stream, where that drive-through bump out is, from there to the Hershey Park Drive side of the building. What is that dimension versus what it was when you came to us a year ago?
There is the same dimension.
It's exactly the same. It hasn't changed. So the building's expanded this way then in terms of the square footage?
No, what we did is we had infills. This area here, this whole edge here, the whole drive-through edge, I apologize. This portion has grown right in here, okay? The building over here did not change as far as the overall dimension. This is where it did change right in that location, right there.
So the addition was on plan north, not plan south. The plan south building line has stayed the same.
Drive-through windows set back several more feet away
from the rest of the building.
The rest, yes.
Okay, so it was offset.
Yes.
Okay.
And we did not realize how Starbucks had their drive-through arrangement configured, and they wanted the edge of the bump up directly on top of the curb, not set back.
Right. So the overall rectangle, the width from stream side to Hershey Park Drive side, that dimension of the overall rectangle of the building hasn't changed.
It did not change. Okay. So if I thought I was to draw a rectangular box around the whole thing, that box did not change.
So the additional square footage of the building is basically that area around the drive through.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I wanted to know. Okay, any other questions from the board? Okay. Seeing that there are no other people in the room, so we'll have no comments from the public tonight. So the board has 45 days to render a decision, and you have 30 days thereafter to appeal if you're aggrieved in any way. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I assume everybody is okay with finally tackling this item that we've kicked down the road a couple times. And, okay, great. So I think we talked about, we wanted to talk about hearing officers, and we also wanted to talk about remote attendance, and they're not necessarily mutually exclusive, I think, is kind of how we left this, that we can make a decision about how we want to conduct hearings, and we can also maybe make a different determination about to what degree we want to allow remote attendance for non-hearing related items, like voting on cases as well as other issues like this kind of a discussion we're having tonight. All right, I think that's kind of the distinction. I think, Megan, we kind of framed out previously on this, right?
Yes.
Okay, so.
Should we do them one
any
at
thoughts?
A time?
Yeah, so maybe you want to take, yeah, it might be good to, yeah, I agree, Mike. You want to start?
So for the hearing officers, we were
Microphone.
So for the hearing officers, we were discussing whether two. What was the discussion, whether two was enough, or how many, the number?
Megan, you want to reframe out what we're permitted to do versus what we're, you know, we're not necessarily required to do, but what we're permitted to do and what goes along with that, I think, is kind of the question.
Correct. The concern had been if there are not enough members attending a meeting, but there's a hearing scheduled, how that would proceed. because if a decision is not made within a time of application, it could be deemed a deemed approval rather than having a hearing on the merits. And so the MPC allows the board to appoint board members as hearing officers to take testimony so that if there isn't a quorum, the hearing can still be held. And then it is up to the applicant to decide if they want to have the hearing officer make that decision or the full board. And if they want the full board to make that decision, then the transcript is transcribed and the board members review the transcript and then vote on a decision.
So the board can appoint one or more hearing officers, right? So if we
Right.
don't have a quorum, it could be one or it could be two in that case.
Yes.
But not, obviously, if we had more than three, there's no need for a hearing officer.
Right, right. And even if there's a conflict for one of the board members, they would at least be present to count towards the quorum.
So in theory,
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, so like for example, if you were neighbors with an applicant,
oh right,
and you wouldn't be able to, you know, you lived right next door, you would have a conflict, but you'd still be here. You would count towards the three being the quorum,
right.
But you wouldn't participate in the decision making.
So in theory, could that mean that there could be one person here? Only four people could be absent, and then under the current rules, hypothetically, if we named everyone a officer, then if there was just one member present, that member could, in theory, make the decision for the applicant if they decided they didn't want to go the route of the transcript. And
yes, hypothetically.
Okay.
Yes.
I have to say, I'm not a fan of that concept.
Agreed.
Gives too much power to one or two people. Yeah. It's
agree,
a reason Tom. For having five people.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, I agree, Tom. I think that whole aspect of that the applicant then decides whether the whole board versus
yeah.
part of the board. I mean, if the board decided that we would only have a hearing officer taking testimony, and then the whole board made a decision, but that's not an option. We don't have that option to limit the applicant's choice, is that right?
Correct. Under the MPC, the applicant has the discretion to do that.
Right. given that aspect of it, yeah, I think it does.
I tend to agree with Tom. The only concern I have is that it's not about us, it's about the applicant, and if we can't be in attendance, that it shouldn't be there. We're making our problem their problem. That's the concern I have.
And I understand what you're saying, and I agree. Is it possible for us to have hearing officers that take the testimony so they meet the requirement? We don't have a deadline that we fail to meet as far as hearing their case, but then the vote has to be made by the five or a quorum.
Well, the MPC does allow for that, but then it allows the applicant to be the one to decide if the hearing officer who's taking the testimony will be the one making the decision or if it would be the board. So the applicant would have that discretion. So there is that possibility that that would not happen.
So I have a question then, since I'm kind of new to the board here. How many times in recent history has it happened that we haven't had a quorum to hear and somebody got their approval without a hearing?
We've not had it since I've taken over for Tony. We have had situations where we were concerned about having a
yeah.
quorum, but ultimately,
which prompted
people
this discussion.
Up. Yes, right. Yes, I think.
But that's the only time it's happened.
Yeah, we have not had a hearing officer case since October of 2015 that I'm aware of.
Okay, because was that time that you were concerned about having a quorum during 2020 and 2021 because of the
it
whole
was a couple reason. Months ago.
I think it was the end of the
February?
Year. Oh, well.
Wasn't January or February?
I thought it was maybe
yeah,
the end of
the
end
Whaler
of last
case
year.
Is what it was.
Yeah.
They
decided to continue, and so
yeah.
we delayed it in February and March in our conversation because it was supposed to be on our agenda originally in February.
Yeah. And it was the January meeting.
January and March is when we tabled and then brought it back this time. So it was the January meeting that we weren't sure. And remember, my schedule changed at the last minute, so I was able to be here, and that's what made the quorum. Otherwise, we wouldn't have had it. But that's the first time that's ever happened. Yeah. So there's part of me that's like, it never happens, so having a contingency plan could be reasonable. But I also think there are times when the stars could just align. And I don't think that it follows the spirit of what the MPC provides for with a 5-person board and a 3-person quorum to potentially put that power. I mean, there are times where if it did happen and you think of some cases, one person could have decided that. That the rest of the board doesn't do. It's not good for the dynamic of this board. It's not good for, I think, the township, and it's just not good governance.
Yeah.
And do we not have the option to set a special meeting if for some reason...
we do.
You know, for some reason, it just there's no way to get a quorum on
the 24-hour notice.
What would we need to do in order to set that special meeting in terms of notice and so on?
Well, we'd have to provide new notice, but we would have the ability to have a special hearing. We would just need to make sure that the board members were there and that we were able to give notice. I think we've also sometimes tried to encourage the applicant to ask for a continuance, but there's no guarantee that they would do that. And at worst case scenario, you know, getting into the remote attendance, we could, if we have somebody calling in, they could vote to appoint in that certain circumstance hearing officers, which may result in one or two people making a decision. But if we were up against it and somebody could call in, we could for that case. Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
But then we'd need to make sure that we had enough board members who could call in.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I think
we did just a few months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think
Sandy and Mike called in.
You know, everything that we probably don't want to do this, and if we can instead, Megan, just hold that, you know, like you just explained in a particular case.
Well, and I think if we found it helpful, if people, when they know they can't come, let everybody know ahead of time so that if we do have this problem, we can kind of try to coordinate.
Out of curiosity for another scenario, what would happen if, so say tonight one of us was missing, and then the next time we had an issue where we didn't have quorum, but one of the people that was here was not at the last meeting.
Yeah.
And then if they were hearing officer, they could essentially vote on the approval that they didn't hear because they're the only one there.
But if
do you follow what I'm saying?
But I think, too, like Megan said, if we can know it far enough in advance and make appropriate plans rather than, I agree, nobody here wants to have one person making a decision and having to back that up and say...
I just don't want to react to that one-time situation and make a change to the way that we operate because it happened once.
Yeah, especially if our remote calling...
You don't want one person or two people making the decision.
I think we all agree on that.
Yeah.
And especially if we can continue to dial in remotely in emergencies, then...
Yeah, surely.
Well, we're going to come back to that in just a moment, and let's try to formalize that. Procedure process.
I mean, they kind of go together, I guess.
I think we're saying as far as appointing a, let me see if I can summarize this, as far as appointing a hearing officer or officers, that we are not going to do that as a matter of course, and that we will, you know, reserve that for special circumstances in the future and do so on a one case or you know, whatever number of cases are pending at that particular time. On a case-by-case basis. Is that what I'm hearing everybody say?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know that we need to make a motion to that effect or anything because we're not changing anything in our procedure, or do we need to document that somehow?
No, I think it's on the record. I think only if we were appointing hearing officers right. would we need a motion.
Right, okay.
So a quick question for you, just my clarification. If a hearing is scheduled and we don't have a quorum, and it's, does that mean that variance is granted automatically, or?
No, we have, I think it's 60 days from the time of application to have the hearing.
Oh, so we could push it off to the next hearing.
Or we could schedule a special hearing.
So the likelihood of two meetings in a row of us not having a quorum is very, very low.
Well, we have to issue a decision within
45 days.
45 days, but how long from the application till we do the hearing, and how long from the hearing to the decision?
I believe it's 60 days from the application that we have to have the first hearing, because the MPC does provide that we have to give the applicant so many hours of hearings. Luckily, we have not gotten to that point. That we've had one so long that we've had to continue it. So I think it's 60 days from the application to the first hearing, and then we have to have a decision within 45 days, and then they have 30 days to appeal.
45 of the first hearing. So depending on how our meetings fall, we might be able to do the next month's meeting without the applicant agreeing to a continuance, but we may not.
Right. It depends on how it falls, right. And I'd have to get a calendar out and count. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Sometimes yeah. it's 4 weeks and 4 weeks. So in that right. case, we'd be okay. But if it was one of those was a 5 week gap, then we wouldn't be.
We actually have had that happen in the past 2 years, where the paper failed to run the second notice. So the applicant was informed that they would hear that their testimony would be provided at the next meeting because it fell within the 60 days. So there is a precedent that we have done that before.
Yeah, and how much notice do we need to give for a special meeting if we had to schedule a special meeting?
I think it's 24 hours, isn't it? For an emergency special.
I thought I was thinking it was maybe 5 days, but I'd have to check. I know we had to do it one time for a snow emergency, and I'd have to check to see if not having a quorum constitutes an emergency. So,
right, okay, but it's not. You don't believe it's weeks, though.
I think if we had a special hearing, we had enough time in that 60 days, we would be able to schedule a special hearing, presuming that there were enough board members available.
Okay, so now to the remote.
So everybody's okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. So as far as remote attendance for other matters other than the hearing itself, I think that's what we were talking about.
Yeah, I would recommend that we not have board members participate in actual hearings by telephone because they're not able to see the screen and see the red pointer. But the case law provides that as long as everybody in the room can hear everybody on the telephone, and as long as the person on the telephone can hear everybody in the room, then for purposes of voting or discussions like this, they would be able to participate by telephone. I just think for hearings, being able to see the witnesses and judge credibility and have exhibits in front of you, such as in this case where they provided new exhibits that weren't in the packet, it's not feasible to have testimony in hearings with people participating by phone. But for voting purposes and other discussions, I think that's appropriate.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Everyone okay with that?
Yep.
I mean, obviously, you know, we'd both like to be here, but there are things that happen. And I mean, the other thing that's concerned me from the start, too, is, you know, we have cases where there's a number of us here for the actual hearing.
Yes.
And we have had this a number of times now since I've been on the board two and a half years now, where we've had an adequate number for a quorum for the hearing, but then some of those people who were at the hearing were not able to make the next meeting. And if you're not at the next meeting, then you're not voting on it. So, you know, back to your concern, Tom, that I think we all agree on, you don't want one or two people making the decision. That's what it could come down to in some cases, if we don't allow that remote access for voting on cases that have previously been heard in person.
Well, and we've also had some circumstances where that might change the decision.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So I guess to that, and if I could also just ask, typically once we meet in executive session afterwards and make a decision, it doesn't change, and we haven't often run into an issue where attendance the next time compromises the vote, but it could happen. How does that factor into the staff giving an unofficial approval indication to the applicant?
Yeah, good point.
Well, I thought that was what of the reasons that we talked about them not doing it unless they were asked.
But you do that often.
Well, I thought we don't do that.
We, if asked, we don't call the people. If asked, we tell them that the solicitor was directed to write a decision this way. And then we also explain, we don't ever get into vote count, but we also explain that it is not a guarantee, but that's the way the decision has been written. But
yeah, but it's not official until you vote at the next meeting.
That's what I'm trying to get at. We let them know that it is not official until it is officially voted on.
Yeah, I mean that could happen. I mean that could happen previously. Where
one question is hypothetically again. It's all we're doing is like what if.
Right.
But let's say that. You know you're not going to be available and you can't even phone in for a vote because you're going to be out of the country. Are you allowed to say, hey, I'm leaving the country, but I would vote yes. Like, I can't email you and let you know, right? You have to be...
Right. Be for the Sunshine Law, you have to participate live or by phone.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're going to be able to cover every
every
eventuality with what we're talking about here, every possibility of absence. But I think what we're trying to do is, at least this is what I think about it, is that I think what we're trying to do is make it easier when one of us has a conflict of some sort or another, which could either be a health conflict, which has been a factor, but or a scheduling, travel, whatever conflict, to be able to still participate in everything but the new hearing process, if you can make it work. If you can't make it work, well, and just, we can't do
everything. Everyone on this board has a lot of integrity and would never say, hey, you know what, I don't feel like going, so it's an obligation, so if you can be there, you'll be there.
Right. And with respect to the decisions, I mean, if it's a 5-0 decision, if one or two people aren't there, it doesn't really affect it. What we've run into is when there's a split decision and one person who had voted as part of the three isn't going to be there, then it changes the decision from a granting or denial to the opposite.
Right. Well, tonight, I mean, the previous case reference tonight is an example of that. That was a 3-2.
Yeah. Exactly.
It would have died in a tie if one of the approving votes wasn't here.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's better if we can vote on those, if we're able to get, on a call where we meet the criteria Megan's laid out. I think it better represents what this board's, decisions are. I mean, I don't think it's reasonable to expect, this person's for and this person's against, and we had a split decision, and now we have a, 1-1 or a 2-2 vote. I don't think it's reasonable to expect the people on one side or the other to change their vote just to go to support what the five as a whole maybe decide. That doesn't make sense either. So I think you know, we allow a little more flexibility, and then we can, you know, proceed where everyone has the opportunity to participate in that vote, despite, you know, a conflict that might arise.
Right, and I think, again, that goes back to, if you know you're not going to be able to be here, let staff know as soon as you know, or if there might be a potential that you're not going to be here, so that things can be coordinated and and set up.
Yes. And we have had, you know, there's been times where we've had kind of, you know, I'd say more last minute, you know, circumstances. And sometimes that's unavoidable, but I think we all need to make the effort to try to give further notice if possible.
Could I add just one thing into the discussion that's not relevant to hearing officers or remote? When we have cases that there has been a recent decision or, you know, case before the board within the last couple of years or that specific project, can that be included in that? Because in the worksheet, it referenced the cases relative to that property today, but the township doesn't have online cases, so it's not like we can go search those. I was able to do it because I still have the emails. Because I don't delete those emails, so I was able to search the case number by Megan's email and find it to read in advance. But I think it would be helpful in preparation to have been able to recall the details of those meetings. The Dropbox link for the applications also get deleted, so I couldn't go back and review the old plans. Because that wasn't there anymore. There's nothing that we can search electronically on the township website. So I feel like it brings us in somewhat blind to these where this board has heard that case before.
Yes, that's a good idea.
You're not talking about the decision then? You're talking about the...
Either or.
I thought we were posting the decisions.
We post the decisions. I think you're referencing the actual physical plan. It would have been nice to see what was proposed a year ago compared to what was proposed today, so you could see that there was no...
Well, and maybe it's just not clear on the website that the copies of the decision, it's not searchable, and like if it's embedded into the minutes or something, you'd have to go through each one of the documents.
Oh.
Like you can't just go grab an attachment from
They're sorted by month.
The previous application is what we...
Well, application or the decision.
With the decision, where is it on the website?
Yeah, would it take you more than a minute or two to show us, David? Because that would help at least. But that's only the decision. That doesn't give us, like, what we were talking about here at the plan.
Be better because it's got more details?
It would. But I was even just trying to remember what the decision, like what we even heard for.
Right, like you, Lindsay, I went back to my...
I could remember the property, but I couldn't remember. And then... couldn't get to the old Dropbox link that we had been given.
And even if we've saved it, that doesn't help, like Tom right now, where, you know, you're new. So.
Adopted decisions. There it is.
Oh, I never even saw that there.
Okay, so we know, so we can get to
now
the
it's
decisions.
There. Thank
but,
you.
But
that
the,
is helpful. But
the,
it doesn't provide the,
not the bank
packet.
Yeah.
Which I understand. Like, I mean, it's not even technically entered as evidence into that current hearing. It's
well, it gives background.
Yeah,
a little reminder.
We're getting a little off topic. Good point. But I want to kind of wrap up this discussion, and then, you know, if we want to ask David to give us that information as part of the week
ahead, that's my only request. Is that
can you do that as part of your week ahead, David? If there's a if there's a pertinent, you know, prior case.
Yeah, I will. From now on, let applicants know. If the board's already heard a case similar, or you have the plans from a previous zoning hearing board, submit it as an exhibit that they can look back on. It's that easy to ask them, because I guarantee they still have the files.
Or you could do it.
Right? Don't you still have the...
Yeah, we still have them, but... it might be easier to get them from the applicant because they're in digital form already, whereas we'd have to scan it in.
We get the links to the documents to view the applications.
That I don't know. Janelle sets up those links for me, but I don't know if they're somewhere on the computer that those are archived.
Why don't you talk to Janelle and,
yeah.
and tell us
dig into this
meeting.
And I'll shoot out an email recapping what we can do as a township and what we can ask the applicant to do moving forward.
So we can see prior decisions at least in the last 2 years, right? I don't.
Yes, the adopted decisions go back to 2020, which
right,
is when that conversation mm-hmm. was. As far as the applications, we can.
We'll find out what's
I can,
available.
I can include those with my staff comments. And,
yeah. And it could be because you've switched from Dropbox to OneDrive, like the Microsoft. Like that could be why we can't access the old ones because it's changed. It just would be helpful.
Common scenario are extensions, right? Like 1 year, it's expired. And
yeah, that keeps happening all the time.
Right. So why don't you let us know in an email then what the township can do in terms of applications and in particular, like, you know, plans and things like that. I mean, that would have been helpful, I think, for this case. I know Mr. Wheeler did a good job of, mm-hmm. of you know, contrasting on the plans what he had proposed previously. Okay, so back to our question here. Unless there's more discussion, I'll make a motion.
Second.
make a motion.
Oh, I thought we were going to adjournment. I'm sorry. I was thinking we were going to adjournment.
I'm
going
to make a motion that we, although the MPC allows it, I think we need to incorporate it as a procedure for this board. I'd like to incorporate that officially, that we will allow, you know, phone in participation for votes and for other business other than hearings. Other than the conduct of a hearing, to members that for some reason have a conflict and otherwise can't participate in person.
Second.
Thank you, Lindsay. Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so that motion passes. Okay, great. So is there any?
I move to adjourn.
Okay, thank you, Sandy. I'll second that. Any discussion? Nope. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. We're returning to executive session. Okay.
Can we take a quick
time? Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, Mike.